You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast, but before we get started, I wanted to tell you about an exciting opportunity for you and the leaders you know this fall, the Pipeline Conference. Our team, the Lifeway Leadership Team, is hosting Pipeline on October 13 in Nashville. And it's a conference unlike others you've probably been to because it's a training conference, an event that will show you and your church leadership team how to launch a leadership pipeline. You'll hear from speakers such as Tom Rayner, Eric Geiger, Kerry Newhoff, and Paul Tripp. We'll have plenary sessions interspersed with shorter, practical TED-style talks. We'll have Q&As with the speakers to clarify and apply what was said, and we'll also offer a second day built around coaching and implementation that will have limited seating. And we really want you to join us. Go to myleadershippipeline.com to learn more and to register. Pricing is affordable, and we're offering an early bird discount through the end of July, so you want to move quickly. Again, go to myleadershippipeline.com for more information and to register. We look forward to seeing you there. Enjoy the podcast. Hey, and welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. This is your host, Barnabas Piper, here as usual with Todd Adkins.
What?
And the man shaking his head, who you haven't heard yet, is Eric Geiger.
I don't have anything to say after a random what?
No, after Todd does that, there's very little to say.
I just leave you speechless.
Before we jump into our topic for the day, I just wanted to highlight for listeners, if you haven't yet, go to the App Store on whatever your mobile device is, look up Lifeway Leadership, and download our app. And that's not really a request. It's more of an order.
Do it now.
Do it immediately. It's a really clean, nice app. It's great to use in terms of just the interface. But
you know what's on there?
It's got all sorts of video content.
Pipeline week.
It's got all of our pipeline stuff.
It's got connected to
pipeline. It's got pipeline. It's got video training. It's got all of our blog content from lifeway.com/leaders. It's got all of that stuff. So look up the Lifeway Leadership app. It's free on all app platforms, and we think you should get it, and you should go do so immediately. Eric, are you periscoping this or just taking pictures?
I just took a picture, man.
Just taking pictures? Okay.
I'm honored to be in the room.
It's great. I didn't know if this was going live or if this was going to be Snapchatted or Instagrammed or where were we going to be living?
Eric Geiger on Insta.
All right. Well, today we are talking about conflict management.
I'm about to bust some conflict up in here right now.
That's right. Eric's about to bring the conflict. So conflict management, something that is well known to all of us, probably because of our various strong personalities. But let's just hit our first question. So Todd, I'm going to tee this one up for you.
All right.
And that is, can a leader avoid conflict? And why or why not to your answer, since that's a yes or no question.
All right. I would say a leader cannot avoid conflict.
Cannot, like, should not, or cannot, like, is incapable of? No,
you can't avoid it. If you're leading, if you're going any direction, if you're actually leading something, you're going to have conflict because typically there's not forward progression without conflict because there's usually a keeper of the status quo. Or if you're doing something,
just 'cause it's
someone's
going
to throw rocks at you.
And if you're making movement forward, there's going to be some sort of friction or resistance.
Absolutely, because you're going to be interacting with your team when you're, you know, making decisions. I mean, you know, each time you make a decision, there are conflicting choices. I mean, you cannot avoid conflict.
Inevitable. It's completely inevitable. Even on great days and on days where you understand that, gosh, we are living in a fallen and broken and messed up place. It's inevitable. Some of the conflict's bad because we live in a world that's fallen, and so there's unhealthy tension on teams. There's relational strife because of sin, because of the fallenness of our world. But even when things are healthy, there's good conflict. And so even when a ministry or a team or an organization is moving in the right direction, there's going to be both bad conflict, but there's also going to be healthy conflict and good conflict. When there's growth, there's also tension and conflict that comes along with it. So conflict is inevitable, both bad and good conflict.
What is good conflict? Because I think for a lot of people, especially in our society full of trigger warnings and thin skin and whatever else, people think of conflict and want to kind of shy away from it. So what is an example, or what is good conflict? Well,
to me, an illustration of good conflict would be if you've ever in high school, if you're on the basketball team or football team and you had to work out and you wanted to break through your bench press record or whatever, you would Todd used to actually work out a lot.
I know. I think Todd used to be.
He was like, he was big time in the working out.
Dude, and here's just, if I knew then what I knew now.
You wouldn't have worked out?
No.
You'd work out more?
I wouldn't have worked out as much, especially on.
Things that don't matter. All right, I'm going to get back to the illustration at this point.
Todd's having internal conflict.
I'm having an internal conflict right now.
You have to put more weight than you can handle to bust through a barrier that you're at. So you basically have to put your body under conflict.
You have to hurt your body.
You have to put your body under tension and pain to then have a greater,
that's why I don't lift
greater end result in the end. You have to, but the pain produces the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So the same thing with good conflict is when a ministry or organization or a team is growing, there's going to be healthy conflict. Now, if people handle healthy conflict in a mature way, they address the problem, they address the opportunity, they don't address the people, they don't try right. to, they don't criticize people, they go after problems. And so growth creates problems to solve. New opportunities yep. creates problems to solve.
But so it kind of becomes,
good
it becomes
example of this.
Oh, go ahead.
So I can remember a time where we were trying to decide where our next campus was going to be. And in the process of that, you've got a room full of campus pastors who understand the city, who understand who the leaders are in our pipeline, and wrestling through where to put a campus and who goes to that campus, that produced some conflict. The other thing I would say is when we wouldn't do it on something like this, but we had this thing where we would bring people into our meeting, and it was voice, vote, view. Have I talked about that on the podcast?
As helpful.
Yeah,
helpful.
Yeah, that was. I think that came up on a meetings podcast. It was like one of the first five we ever did.
But still, what it does is you're bringing people into the room, and they either have a voice, that means they're there to speak on a specific subject.
Mm-hmm.
They have a vote, so they have decision rights, and really it's only the campus pastors in our
setting. In that context,
had that.
Yeah.
Or it was a view, and that meant, hey, man, you're just here to listen and learn. And
yeah.
it may sound like we were being jerks or whatever, but we were really trying to lead them well because what was happening out in the staff was people wondered what they did in there and how
right.
they made decisions.
And they became us.
Yeah, and sometimes they would get heated.
Yeah.
So what we wanted to do was have people rotate through, especially leaders that we were investing in, that could watch how we wrestled through a decision, mm-hmm. that could see healthy conflict. And so it was a valuable tool. Now, when we would invite them in there, we would explain vote, voice, view.
Right.
To them. And it was a really good tool that we used for leadership development.
It seems like healthy conflict is where, I mean, like Eric said, that the people are not attacking each other. They are attacking a problem, an idea, a concept. So they may be on opposite sides of it in disagreement, but the problem is not the other person. The problem is that we haven't yet found yeah. a solution.
And even if they are in full agreement, it's still a conflict.
Right.
Because they're tackling something that's larger than themselves,
right.
they're tackling something new. So that's healthy conflict.
Well, so since conflict cannot be avoided, let's hit our second question, and that follows right on the heels, is just what are the consequences for avoiding conflict? What happens if a leader tries to avoid conflict?
There's going to be a lack of trust on the team because if a leader runs from conflict, and this is common, so typically, you have two, I think, polar opposite errors on two polar extremes. Mm-hmm. You have the leader who loves conflict. Like, he wants his team fighting. You know, he wants his team because
it's the football coach who likes fights in practice.
But he's a little right, crazy. Or it's the leader who actually likes that there's turmoil because that leader is then able to solve problems and likes to like step in and be the hero, is attracted to drama. Right. That's a leader I don't want to follow. But then the other extreme is a leader who runs from every conflict, avoids conflict completely. The reason that leader can't be trusted in the long run is because critical issues are not surfaced and attacked. The niceties, the pleasantries aren't even authentic and real because everyone knows that beneath the surface there's struggles. Incompetence is allowed to drag the whole team down because things aren't attacked. Mm-hmm. Speed is impacted because this conflict is hurting the whole. And then the it's unhealthy because the culture is unhealthy because the leader really cares more about being liked than the team accomplishing what the team is supposed to accomplish.
And I wanted to ask this question about conflict avoidance because I feel like it's pretty obvious what the problems are with loving conflict because things tend to get kind of volcanic quickly. It's explosive. It's ugly. It gets nasty. Conflict avoidance can give the appearance of peacefulness for a long time because everything is ugly under the surface.
Or it's a volcano.
Yeah, and then it's Old Faithful. It just sort of goes off after a while and explodes. But all the conflict is handled. It's handled behind closed doors where people are kind of sniping toward each other about somebody else and things like that, as opposed to sort of the open, healthy conflict we were talking about. So, in an organization, what happens if a top level leader is a conflict avoider? Like what happens to the organization over time? Not just sort of the team dynamics.
Passive aggressiveness.
Yes, you're going to have a passive aggressive culture that's going to run your organization from tip to tail, like all the way up and down the food chain.
People know how to be nice in a meeting, nice to each other in certain settings, so that the mirage of no conflict continues, but beneath the surface there's backstabbing, fighting, territorial grabbing, all of those things. It's very unhealthy.
I feel like an organization that avoids conflict, just they cannot get as much done.
They don't
totally. It takes you spend so much time on politics, and so
trying
little time
trying
on
to untangle
the
mess. Yep. Yeah. All right. So the third question, we touched on part of it, and that is. Is there such a thing as healthy conflict? We determined yes. So let's emphasize the second half, and that is, how can a leader foster healthy conflict in his or her team?
Raise problems to solve and rally the team around those problems to solve. Focus the energy not on you did this, you said this, but here's the problem. Let's be on the solution side of the problem.
Mm-hmm. And I think also, I think Eric's right on in that. And I think also understanding your team and your team dynamic and their personalities. You know, sometimes I'm going to have to ask this person a question in order for them to out themselves how they really feel about this.
Because they're not going to be the one who just sort of jumps in the middle of the fray.
They may be somewhat conflict averse, but for the health and good of the team and the health of them, I need to draw out their voice so that we can get to where we need to go.
Well, I think this may be exceptionally obvious, but I don't think it's something that most leaders are terribly comfortable doing, and that's keeping the negative conflict at bay. So you squash it when you see it. Whether it's the passive aggressive kind of thing or somebody who's just being an outright jerk, you have to keep that stuff at bay where you shut them down. What are you laughing at?
I'll tell you later. Tell you later.
Thinking of outright jerks? Are you laughing at Todd?
It's Todd.
It's me.
Let's blame Todd. All right. So fourth question. What are the worst ways to handle conflict as a leader? I feel like there may be some stories that could be used as examples here. Somebody who you've worked with or worked under or worked over who you've seen who just handles conflict miserably. The worst ways to handle it.
I think I have seen in ministry more pastors avoid it than create it. And by the way, when I say create conflict, there are some leadership books that say that, hey, that's what a leader does. A leader goes in and surfaces problems and creates conflict. That's the healthy conflict.
Right.
I'm referring to leaders creating the unhealthy conflict.
Almost more interpersonal conflict.
Right. Constantly. Sometimes leaders, this is very, very unhealthy, actually don't want to keep everybody on their heels so that they always feel needed. Which is horrible, horrible leadership, because truly
and codependency.
Yeah, truly a great leader is someone who is able to work himself or herself out of a job, and the leader who's able to work himself or herself out of a job is someone who will always have a job. Someone who's able to develop people, set direction, mobilize people towards that direction. Those people will always be necessary. But back to the question, I think I see more in ministry. People avoid conflict
right.
just because they think that conflict means things are unhealthy
or
unspiritual or broken. Therefore, I want to avoid the appearance of conflict at all. And so to avoid the appearance of it, they'll just avoid it. And so some conversations that need to be happening aren't happening.
Well, and you'll have a situation where there may be a guy that's just a good debater or is bully. I mean, just frankly, a bully. And there, you can't allow that to happen, you know, at the table, in a meeting.
Right.
Just because you're great at a conference table doesn't mean that you know what direction we should go. Or just because you're an eloquent speaker does not mean necessarily you're a good leader. And so sometimes people will get into when there's conflict, you know, somebody can make a great speech, and you just have to, if you're leading that meeting, you have to understand, okay, I may have to go back around this other person that had a really good point.
Mm-hmm.
It may take them longer to make the point. I may have to ask them a couple clarifying questions to get it out of them. I would just say a big part of handling conflict well, I think, is asking good questions.
Yes.
Yeah. Asking good questions to surface problems.
That'll help us answer our fifth question. Okay. I wanted to – one thing that I noticed on this, and I think, Eric, you sparked this when you said you see it most as avoidance. I feel like one of the greatest areas for conflict is just change. If there's a drastic change of direction, change of culture, whatever it is, and a leader who just simply refuses to lead the hard work of change because that's too much conflict.
Yeah.
It would be too hard to lead a large team through, you know, going from an old-fashioned way of doing things to a current way of doing things. And then the church especially, that avoidance of conflict ends up leading to ministry inertia, becoming irrelevant, losing touch with people, and just sort of fading over time, I think. So, Todd, you were bringing up healthy ways to handle conflict, and that is our fifth question. That is, what are the most helpful ways? You mentioned asking good questions. Can you give some more examples or give maybe just examples of good questions that can be asked to either draw out where the conflict is coming from or to hear from – I mean – what are some ways that good questions help solve this problem, I guess,
ask
is what I'm asking.
Ask why about five times in a row.
Ask why. So essentially, channel your inner four-year-old.
Channel your inner four-year-old.
Why?
If there's a problem surfaces and you ask why about four times in a row, when they give you the answer and you're like, tell me why.
Yes.
Again, let's go deeper and deeper into that. I think that's one thing that's helpful. I think – if you look at helpful ways to handle conflict as a leader, the biggest thing that you have to do is what we've come back to, I think, three times now, which is surface the problems.
Yeah. Yep. Well, let me throw out some scenarios on this, because I feel like conflict, there's we've touched on some different kinds. There's personal conflict. There's, you know, organizational direction conflict. There's difficult project conflict, whatever. So as a leader—
At some point, we probably should bring in a verse in Matthew or something.
You know, go to that person first and then report, you know.
Or if you have a problem, if you're bringing an offering and you have a problem with your brother, leave the offering and go make things right and then come back. So this is, there really is, there's don't let the sun go down on your anger. I mean, there's a lot of verses on on just this festering beneath the surface that should not be among God's people.
I mean, if you think about it, a lot of sin stems from conflict or conflict stems from sin, whether it's pride, jealousy, anger.
Yeah.
So scenarios, two of the team members you're leading are having an interpersonal conflict between them. Like, so two people on your team just are not getting along. They're not seeing eye to eye. Yeah. They're sniping at each other. How as a leader do you handle that conflict?
I get them together. So if someone—
Boxing gloves,
for
ring.
Sure. Let's bring it on. No, if someone's comes to me back and drops statements about somebody else, mm-hmm. I'm saying, have you talked to so-and-so?
Right.
I want to get them together. I don't want to play referee. I shouldn't play referee.
Yeah, or the telephone game where it's passing things back and forth. No.
If you all have not worked this together, mm-hmm. then involving me, I mean, we're actually skipping, I think, a step. Now, someone saying, you're trying to use Matthew 18 on it. If you have a problem with your brother, if your brother sinned against you, go to that person. And so I know Matthew 18 is about sin, and this might be a conflict issue that's not sin-related, might be competence-related mm-hmm. or work-related. But the principle of going to your brother, of going to the person that you're having the struggle with, I think that principle is really, really wise, even though that text is about sin and you're asking about conflict. And so if there's two people on my team that are struggling, I want to push the ball back into that court and encourage them to work it.
Now, I would say I would use sometimes a project that and make them do it together. One that may involve time mm-hmm. Or spending time shoulder to shoulder. It's hard.
Now I know why you do some of the stuff you do.
Yeah, it's hard not to at least have some warmth for somebody if you've knocked out a project together, especially if it was meaningful.
At least professional respect at the very least. Okay, so scenario number two is the conflict of just a toxic culture. So not just two team members who dislike each other, but that culture we were talking about earlier that's full of passive aggressiveness, full of backstabbing, full of just sort of the politics that everything is just kind of a sticky, nasty mess all the time.
Well, culture is ultimately people. It's a collection of people and how they value, what they value, how they treat each other, the rules of engagement on the team. And so really the best way, and this is challenging, but the best way to change a culture is to show a better way. And especially if the Lord gives you favor and you are excelling in your role and fulfilling all of your responsibilities well, how you treat others and how you handle conflict, that hopefully by God's grace will be contagious to others in the culture. So I think, you know, take some ownership for, hey, I am in this culture, and so I'm not going to be impacted adversely by the negative aspects of this culture. But I'm gonna set a better example. I'm gonna rise above it.
I'm assuming that drawing a bit of a line in the sand can be beneficial too, and just saying, hey, this is something that I have observed. It's not healthy.
I'm not gonna operate this way.
We're not gonna play that game.
I'm not playing that way.
Okay. Todd, anything to add on toxic culture?
No, I would just say, looking back, I can think of toxic cultures I've been in, and I can also think of people who weren't aggressive enough and came into a healthy culture where there were healthy conflict, and it was just as much of an issue for them as if they entered an unhealthy culture. To them, it was an unhealthy culture.
Because they shied away from conflict too much?
They shied away from conflict too much. And so, you know, for us, it wasn't something that we avoided. Yeah. It was, you know, come in, get everything out on the table, and then let's go to lunch. I mean— And for some people, that was like they just could not disconnect the problem solving and maybe getting passionate about that versus health, you know, unhealthy conflict.
Right.
So it was like I can remember stopping a meeting because I saw the countenance of their face and said, "This is okay.
Yeah, yeah.
This is okay. And it was with me and actually one of our female leaders. And I think that in and she's significantly older than I am and an amazing leader, one of the most strategic people on our staff. And we were having a disagreement over small groups. And I had to say, hey, this is healthy. This is okay. This is healthy.
Right.
And you know, I'm okay. I asked the person, are you okay? And she's like, yeah.
And so then the person who was nervous kind of could breathe a little easier and begin to witness this. All right, third scenario, an incredibly difficult challenge because it is a conflict to overcome, a challenge to reach a goal that that seems unattainable. So leading, you know, resolving the conflict of a challenge you're not sure how to solve. Like a could be a professional goal, could be, you know, it could be a revenue goal, could be whatever it is.
You put the goal on the board and you get the best people around the table and the best people that you are able to influence around the table. And that doesn't necessarily mean people that work for you. It could be people that work alongside you. It could be people that you report to. And so you put it on the you put it on the board or on the table and you bring the go-getter, can-do attitude and people, and you rally around it.
I just think there's so many people that aren't successful because they quit too soon. Mm-hmm. And so anything that you do that is meaningful, that is going to have a tremendous impact, you're going to have problems. There's going to be challenge. There's going to be conflict. Nobody's going to hand it to you, and it would have already been done if it was easy to do. So it's like, okay, we're coming to this obstacle or this roadblock. This didn't go the way we planned. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think it was Tyson. Mike Tyson say everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
Yep. Let's credit him. It sounds like something he would say.
It does.
Can you do your best Mike Tyson impression?
Did you see the video of him falling on that toy? That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, no. The hoverboard?
Yeah,
oh, he so bit it amazing. So hard.
That was... You know what? He owned it and posted it.
Oh, yeah.
So you got to give him props for that.
Yeah, and he races pigeons.
Good for him.
Todd, you know, ran too much random.
This is fantastic.
Sports, all right?
Last pigeons?
Does it count as a sport?
All right, last scenario. The conflict of leading change when an organization is stuck. So kind of overcoming the inertia and all of the friction that comes with that. Now, with that comes interpersonal stuff. With that comes the difficult challenge. With that can come a toxic culture. But just the conflict of leading change. We were just with a large church recently who's trying to institute some new leadership development cultural things. They have a significant amount of change in front of them. I didn't see a lot of toxicity or anything there. It seemed very healthy, but there's going to be the conflict of change because they have an old culture. So what about healthily handling that conflict?
I think it goes back to the same. You put the opportunity – so earlier I said the problem. You put the opportunity on the board, and you get the best players around, and you pursue it with all that you are. And that actually can be a unifying thing. And so when you're unified in the same direction, the conflict becomes a common enemy that you're trying to attack because you have a greater common good, common goal that
you're
pursuing.
You're fighting for something instead of against something.
And you're focused on the problem, not the people. Because in every organization, there will be the keepers of the status quo, and you'll have a tendency to focus on them.
Yeah, to resent them, I would assume.
Well, or to try to get them to do whatever it is you're doing. You know, Napoleon had a rule of three whenever there was change coming, and I know we've mentioned this way back when on another one as well. But it was a third of his army was always going to embrace change. A third was always going to be like, this is the end of the world. I'm never doing this. No, no, no. And then there was a third that was waiting to see what would happen. And so he said, we all have a tendency to focus on the naysayers, the people that are stuck, the people that are the keepers of the status quo, that dig in their feet. Don't do that. Focus on the change that is happening and focus on the people that are positive about the change and continue to tell stories about how this is happening and the positive things that are good to the middle group and to the status quo, to the point where the people that are waiting to see begin to come on board, and the keepers of the status quo either have the choice of looking like a stick in the mud.
Shape up or ship out.
Or getting off the bus.
So quick question about leading those people, because they're still part of the organization. So your efforts in implementing and focusing on change are you really investing most in the people who are most on board? What are you doing with the people who are least on board?
You're listening to them, but you're not giving them a voice. So you want to meet with them privately and listen to them, try to bring them on board, but you're not trying to get this all in a big public setting and have a debate about it or you know, treating it as a communal thing. You want to take those people aside and hear them out. Sometimes just them getting heard and them seeing everybody else moving forward will cause a change of heart.
Yeah.
I would say that's the number one thing.
All right. Well, I hope this has been beneficial to listeners. We touched on a number of different things. Conflict is a bit nebulous because there's all sorts of different kinds, but it is something that's inevitable. So we wanted to talk about it because it's something that can't really be avoided by those in leadership. So before we sign off, just a quick reminder, the Lifeway Leadership app, you can get it at any app store. So that's Google, Android, Apple, any of the above, or you can go to myleadershippipeline.com/app and they have links to all the stores there and you can read a little bit about it. It's a great one for leadership development, for listening to this podcast. If if you're tired of whatever current device you're using, blog content, video content, event updates, all the stuff that we have going on. So check that out. Thanks so much for listening, y'all, and tune in next time.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. As you go, don't forget to visit myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about our upcoming Pipeline Conference. It will be on October 13th in Nashville, Tennessee, and early bird pricing runs through July, so move quickly to register. Again, that website is myleadershippipeline.com. We look forward to seeing you there.